They should have made that into a proper song.
Probably was. Anyway, we are recording if you're interested in that.
Hello.
Sorry.
Whoa.
Sorry, Drew, did I surprise you?
Do you like springing it upon us? Yeah.
That and the recording.
I was just about to be incredibly racist.
Again?
Well.
Fucking English, the English, that's how you
I know.
this typical English,
I
not
was
like
gonna
us.
say I was gonna say mean things about people from Derbyshire.
I don't know if I know anyone from Derbyshire. I'm sure they're lovely,
I
Rocky.
used to live in Derbyshire.
Oh, well, there we go. That's a point in its favour.
Our stereotype about Derbyshire, I'm from Staffordshire, which is next door, is that they talk really slow. And it does seem to bear out when you meet people from Derbyshire. Like, I think you should, go to the. It's like that. It's waiting, waiting, waiting.
What's that famous? There's like a TripAdvisor. What's the best thing to do in Slough? And then they put at the top of it, leave.
Leave,
It wasn't Slough. It was somewhere else. I can't remember where. But like, in the joke.
Slough's a good target for that sort of thing.
Yeah. Well, I don't know anything about Slough, but its name kind of lends itself to.
Yeah, Slough.
It's not a nice name, is it?
No. Or Scunthorpe.
No, my stepdad, my mum's second husband, is from Scunthorpe.
Scunthorpe's actually quite nice.
Okay, I'm sure it
Scunny
is.
Bunny.
Scunny Bunny, but I the name just sounds very.
Is
I don't
it
know.
so you're not it's not because it's got cunt in it, it's just the word itself.
The word itself sounds like a not nice place, but I'm sure it is. I'm not being.
I think some of that is like anti-northern kind of media propagandary kind of low level, but like disdain for the north as like northern place names that they're stupid and funny,
Not like
We're
Welsh
not
place names.
what not like very sensible place name, I think.
Sorry,
never
what place?
heard of
I
it.
wasn't.
Llynfawr
No, sorry, I zoned out again. Where? Sorry, where?
Llynfawr It's a very simple place name. Very simple. And the Welsh people will point out that I am actually saying that a bit quicker and slurring it a bit, but like just for the sake of keeping this
I mean,
podcast
that's how you
under
say it
5 hours.
in conversation. Yeah.
I don't know.
I do.
They do tronicate it in conversation, but I can't remember which how they tronicate it.
Okay, waiting for Hamish.
Sorry, what?
Okay, doesn't we good then? We good?
I was checking which poet did the thing, and it was John Betjeman.
He did what, sorry?
John Betjeman did the "Come Friendly Bombs and Fallen Slow" thing.
I do
Okay.
have a. I'd like
Sorry.
to make a statement at the beginning of this one. I retract my lowering of your expectations, my tempering your expectations.
Oh
I've remembered
yeah, I forgot
I've
about
remembered
that.
what happens towards the end of the season, and it's fucking great, I think.
Good.
It
I like
is.
this episode.
As we're definitely on to a pretty cracking couple of episodes to finish the series.
I mean, I don't necessarily have to have a big action scene to be happy. Like it was, I mean,
No, it's not necessarily about action. I think it's about culmination, right? It can be, yeah.
Well, it's about or revelation. Like I want to find out. I want some of the mystery to gleam through. I mean, I'm not expecting it all to be laid out in the last couple of episodes, but like, I'd
Well,
like to know.
I do have a question for you, Chris, and I'm sorry to air this publicly, but it's been brewing for a while. It's just your whole generation has forgotten what it means to sacrifice for the dream of Mars. That's not, I realize not a question now, but yeah, it's a problem.
Yeah, also I actually during that bit I kind of was thinking, well, what's this guy done? Like has he been in a battle or has
I'm
he
not even
been
sure yet. I mean, he wasn't much cop against Bobby. I mean, okay, he's probably like three times her age, but that's not the point. Well, twice
Yeah,
two and a bit of her age.
they do talk about that time when Mars and Earth came to blows. That's like in their past now, but I don't know how long ago that was, and whether these people whether they're like they're genuinely involved in that conflict, or whether they're just like boomers who
He
sort of steal the.
does seem like the kind of person we would, be in the catering corps and say, I was on the front lines, blah blah
He doesn't
I
have a
mean,
proper
not.
heart.
He doesn't mention the battle. He mentions like growing up and having like nuclear drills or whatever, which yeah, so you think he would mention it if it was part of it, so I think he wasn't, but yeah, bit of a twat. And when Bobby punches him in the face and said, what killed my team or whatever, like, love, like she literally punctuates each word with a punch.
Well, let's are we jumping to that? Are we going to the Bobby bits?
Let's do Bobby.
Yeah. Okay. I see what you mean. Like, I'm warming up to the Bobby a lot more. You know, like
that's going to be good for the Scottish audience.
For me, this moment is a big turning point for Bobby because, like, we know she's a Marine, she's brave, but that kind of bravery for her is a very comfortable kind of bravery. Like, she knows she's loyal to Mars. She wants to protect Mars, so she can go into battle and be that kind of brave. But in this episode, she does like real bravery. Like she turns her back on everything that she thought she, you know, literally her definition of herself is like fighting for Mars. She realizes like that's not the right thing right now. I've got to jump ship and go to my enemy. And like, that is like extraordinarily brave. Mm. She's so fucking brave in this episode.
Avasarala says that to her.
Yeah.
Just before we move on, we talked about food. We mentioned food a minute ago. I can't remember what we said, but I think it's worth mentioning that I had Scottish food for my dinner, actual Scottish food from Scotland for my dinner started. Yeah. I had Scotch pies with baked beans on.
Oh,
and a slice of Scottish bread just on the side, just to mop up the bean juice. Just don't mention that. I've got a freezer full of Scottish meat because my mum got like a hamper thing from a Scottish butcher's. They just deliver anywhere in the UK. So,
do you put anything on your beans, you think?
Not when I'm having it with pie, Scottish pie. No,
I tend to put a bit of black pepper. I put black pepper on fucking everything.
Like I love black pepper.
Well, Scottish pies have got a lot of pepper in them.
Yeah, right. But when you're eating cheap food like canned stews and stuff, like a bit of black pepper makes them delicious.
Oh yeah, I've got all sorts of herbs and peppers and stuff. Yeah.
Made me hungry now, haven't you?
But I was, you know, this was Scotch pie with beans. Scotch pie was the flavour, and definitely was very nice.
Lemon and blueberry.
Nice.
Mm. Like a flapjack. These are quite good.
I like a flapjack. There's two kinds of flapjacks. There's the sticky, syrupy ones, and then there's the crumbly ones that aren't as sweet. I like the crumbly, not so sweet ones. They're really nice.
Okay. Sorry. These anyway, Bobby's view of herself. Mm. Well, she does. I mean, it's Martin's the creepy evil guy that sort of makes her finally click, because he mentions that story. And she sort of goes away and mulls in the story about her and her dad and thinks, wait a minute, if he knows my dad so well, then why wouldn't he tell me? Yeah, no. Lies, like, bang, you know.
But also, like, once she's punched him in the face, like, quite a lot of times, she's got nowhere else to go. Like,
she's made the decision between those two visits, is the point.
Yeah, she knew what she was doing. She had a plan.
And she knew that Avasarala was obviously giving her an out as well.
Yeah.
Although she probably didn't expect her to do it quite so dramatically.
I love that line when she's in Avasarala's office and Avasarala says, like, I didn't want you to start a diplomatic incident. And Bobby goes, and I love this line delivery. She just says, well, you should have been more specific.
Yeah.
because that... They could have delivered that in a quippy, marvelly kind of way, like, "Oh, you should have been more specific then, lol."
Yeah.
But she just says it. She just says it straight, like she literally means, like, "Well, you should." I follow orders.
Yeah. I like the way she speaks to Spy as well. It's like, "What the fuck are you looking at?
What the fuck are you looking at?" Yeah.
And he says, "I don't know Bobby, yet." Yeah.
This is anyway. Bobby. Bobby's world has always been simple. Mars is good. Everyone against Mars is bad, and her world has become far more complicated, and she's dealing with it. Like, she is demonstrating that she is like a good, noble, brave person by dealing with its complication the way she does.
Yeah, she makes the right decisions, I think.
Even in the
I'm not saying necessarily that Avasarala and Earth are in the right. What I'm saying is she recognizes Avasarala for. Despite all Avasarala's reputation and the fact that she's one of the highest ranking people in the UN, she recognizes that she's also probably quite fair, and you know, will give her a proper.
I think she recognizes. I think Bobby must have like a, you know, a decent gut sense of people, and she recognizes that Avatarella isn't playing like factional politics here. She cares about this from the point of view of like all the inhabitants of the whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, even in her first episode, she's like, who do we vote for? Mars. You know, that's almost like a fallback when she doesn't know what to do, is do military stuff or do, you know, jingoistic stuff.
Yeah,
I think that was her whole, her whole identity. I think that was her core. Like, she knew what she was, and she was very comfortable in that, and having that challenge and reacting the way she does is, I love that. And just in terms of cinematography, that scene where, you know, where she where they have the top down view and the you know, the border basically, and she runs across.
That's pretty cool,
It's beautiful looking, and start, and then she kneels down and says, "I'm going to tear up if I carry on talking." Actually, I just that bit just like breaks me down.
Oh, that's
he's a sensitive soul. We have to remember that. Yeah, Chris, in case you're looking for some weird thumbnail graphic, I just noticed how weird it was when I had the bottle. I know I shouldn't drink from the bottle. It's pretty gross anyway, but just...
Is that your roller cooler?
Yeah. Since I've been single again, I've just kind of like given up the, you know, the pretense of like being overly polite, you know, like manners, super manners and stuff.
I'm drinking from the bottle's fine.
Yeah, I mean, if it's your bottle, like, yeah.
Yeah, I'm
like,
the only person drinking from it, so...
Yeah, I wouldn't give it a peanut, but, like...
No, I don't want to give them germs.
You do you not drink tea, Hamish? You're not a tea drinker?
No, not really.
Yeah.
I try it occasionally.
But all I drink is... I have the occasional ginger ale, but, yeah, 99% of the time, it's just tea and water.
I like orange squash. Oh, we've had this conversation, didn't we, about the dry powder and stuff.
A little bit, yeah.
Actually, I was thinking about this. I don't mind the liquid, because with the powder, you need a utensil to scoop the powder out.
No, you'd have like a sachet.
They're in little sachet. Yeah, it's a bit wasteful like, for packaging, but they do have like a portion.
Not as wasteful as a bottle.
Yeah. But they do have a portion.
And it can be paper, which is
Yeah, but not recyclable paper. I don't know. Like, surely there's. I don't know. Like,
no, I mean, they make them. You get them in the UK. You get them.
Yeah. I'm just trying to do the maths on which is more wasteful, because I don't know.
I mean, plastic is just uniquely
it's much
bad
worse for the
everything. Yeah. So long as it's not those plastic coated, you know, like foiled, like we need to go back to like actual fucking paper that you can recycle.
Yeah, but then people will say, "Oh, but it's, you know, it gets damaged." Yeah. And it's there's all sorts. Yeah,
we need to stop caring about that as well.
So, well, I suppose sachets are okay, but I tend to like mine a bit weak.
Have guessed if anybody had said how strong or weak does Chris take his cordial, I would definitely have veered towards weak for you, Chris. Yeah, I don't know why.
I mean, you could use half a sachet and fold it over for later.
Yeah.
Like some sort of pathetic clown.
What?
How's that a clown?
I don't know.
I've used half a sachet of things, you know.
I don't know.
That was weird. That was a straight. That's not a reaction I would have expected. So yeah, well done.
Nothing against clowns, by the way. They're lovely.
No, fuck them. No, they're not.
Oh no, fuck clowns. No, they're lovely. The clowns.
Clowns are all creepy bastards.
Never funny. Often scary.
Yeah,
they're the opposite of what they're. Apart from, if you're going right back to like the Renaissance, you know, like the Peridot or whatever, like French, you know, clowns that were like that. That's fine. That's cool. But like modern clowns, just round them up.
No, I know some really nice clowns. No,
I can just imagine a camp with the high walls and the barbed wire at the top, and all you hear is the sad squeak of now and again.
Oh, like Left 4 Dead 2. No, I like that. They're all right. They're misunderstood.
When we're packing them on the trains, imagine how many will fit in.
Yep.
Oh, God. See, that's funny. Clowns are funny.
If you want to use them as fodder for genocide, Holocaust aside.
Holocaust aside. Bobby actually, yeah, she makes it out with the data stick that
Martin's the iPad.
And Spy has a perfectly sized case for it.
Well, no, I took that to be the pads are a standard size, but I took that to be like if you look at it closely, I take it to be like an anti radio,
a Faraday cage.
Blocking signal so it couldn't get wiped or
it's some kind of
access
security,
remotely
like standard,
or anything. Yeah.
That's it.
There's a bit of writing on that thing as well, so I think you'll find it says something along those lines anyway. If you're the look at things person.
It says fuck clowns.
I can't see any writing on it, but you can see that it actually is a lot more like a Faraday
cage
or a
case, you know.
Yeah, that kind of thing.
It's got a fitting for it. See there's like lines across it as if it's like some sort of...
Yeah, like some sort of protection.
I'm sorry to everybody watching this video and the last video, but I still have this little bit of hair somewhere in my peripheral vision that I cannot get rid of. I'm going to end up with no eyebrows if I keep trying to clip it off there.
Yeah, just shave them off.
Shave them off, yeah. That would look very weird on me.
Yeah, no eyebrows.
I've got very thick eyebrows and also quite expressive eyebrows, I think.
Mm.
I can't move them. If I think about it too much, I can't do it.
Yeah.
But we've got grill of protection there.
There you go. See, and there's these like electric like wires and stuff going through it as if it's protecting it. Yeah.
Yeah.
That says something. Look at the top. It says something. Backwards, but
there is something on it, but I don't know if we get the right.
Before
the right
he closes
camera.
It, I'm pretty sure you can see the writing. Sorry, Chris. If I wasn't so lazy, I would open it looking at myself.
I mean, there is some writing on it. I can't make it out though.
Can't remember what it says.
I don't know.
Only Chris can do it.
Well, I mean,
it says "you're whack," and then can't read it after that.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's basically it's insulting us. You're whack.
You're a buster.
Yeah.
You was well bad.
Hamish is turned for the accents.
No,
that's
Ali G. That was just meant to be young. No, I was just meant to be a young person. So.
Oh, right, okay. Yeah, that was a young person from the 90s, though.
I was going to say, you're right. Yeah.
Well, that's where young people are from, isn't it?
Let's go to a Cypress Hill concert.
I mean, there are full-grown adults that were born
after 9/11. No, Chris, you don't have to remind me of that. No, you don't have to remind me of that.
So, So is it a trap with Jules-Pierre Mao?
Jules-Pierre Mao,
that's the one, yeah.
It feels like a trap. Smells like a trap.
I love that Spy is like, there's no reason for it to be a trap. Nothing about it seems like a trap, so it must be a trap. I love that.
Sort of, they have they go around that quite a lot, actually, in their own conversation. And then he also realizes that she's already decided.
He realizes he's not the decider in this equation. He is the the doer. I think Avicerella does think it's a trap as well, but thinks she can go in there protecting herself, perhaps.
I think that's true, but it's more like she wants to get to the bottom of this, and it's a bit like curiosity killed the cat kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
She knows this is dangerous, but like it's the only place she's going to get answers.
Yeah, here be dragons.
Here be dragons. They found giants in Patagonia, mate.
Yep.
I like that. That's
quite a good bit, yeah. Before we jump all over the place, let's stick with the Jules-Pierre Mao part since we've jumped midway through the Bobby thing as well. The Jules-Pierre Mao thing is we get a bit of an answer to the questions you've been asking the last couple of episodes about who Jules-Pierre Mao is and what he wants, he thinks he's on some sort of big crusade. He thinks he's the good guy in his own story, basically.
Yeah,
And we do learn exactly what happened on Ganymede, or
yep,
series of events wise.
Yeah, yeah. So we get it all put together at last.
So we learn that, and I don't think I picked up on this in previous watches, but we learned that the battle in space wasn't supposed to happen.
No, it wasn't. No.
Yeah, that was propagated by what happens on the planet, which is interesting.
Yeah, which is kind of strange because in the when you saw it, they seem to be happening at the same time.
But after the UN troops started shooting at the monster, so I assume that the ships saw shooting and then got nervous and started shooting each other.
Yeah, basically, yeah. Once somebody, well, they were all on edge already, and it just takes one thing to start it all off. Sorry, it's really fucking annoying me. I can't. You know when something's out of focus as well, you can't even tell how far it is?
Yeah.
It could be a hair from up here. It could be... Anyway, sorry. Anybody wants... And the thing is, if I try to get close to look at it, I can't see anymore.
Yeah.
Because my eyesight's not that good. And then if I take my glasses off, it's even worse. So it's like... Anyway, enough about my...
Jupiter Mouse really got to cut it with the polar neck because it's like...
He's got what looks like a... It looks like he's got a suit that goes to there, and then like a shirt or a collar that's like the whole tunic thing going up.
I do like though that the
I knew that we'd get to that with Chris actually.
The coding for tech bro evil person is basically Steve Jobs. Like that's the symbology, and I kind of like that's kind of what he deserves. So yeah,
I'm not sure he did. He was more just of a hapless hippie grifter, really.
He was a cock, though.
Oh, he was a cock, but it was just
like
the way he
treated people interpersonally, like not in a work context and in a personal context.
Oh yeah, no, he wasn't. He was an arsehole, but I don't think he was. I don't think he was.
He wasn't smart enough to be
evil.
Yeah.
He was just fucking stupid, but.
But you know. I mean, he was a knob end, so using him as he's not Elon Musk. He's not.
No, he's not that a complete level cunt, of it. No.
Yeah, but.
But anyway, yeah, that's. See, I'm thinking more Bond villain than Steve Jobs, to be honest.
I think it's the intersection of those two things. I think it's Steve Jobs as a Bond villain.
I think you're being racist
He's got more gravitas than Steve Jobs.
Yeah. Yes. Well, can we not talk about... Sorry, I don't know what I'm saying.
Yeah, can we not talk about Steve Jobs? This podcast fucking... with that Apple nonsense.
Well, yeah, it's not just that. It's not even the Apple. It's just because he was a fucking hippie grifter. I mean, you know, he was a phone salesman before he...
I do think like Jean-Pierre Mao, I do think he genuinely believed like a computer, because he was like a computer is a bicycle for the mind, right? Like it freezes, it liberates us.
That's what I'm saying. Genuinely... Sort of the hippie side of it, he believed it.
But he treated
people like shit, including the other people that did all the work.
Like rhetorically, he was like, I want to make computers for the common person. But then in actuality, he made computers.
Expensive.
Expensive computers. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, again, that was. I don't want to have this discussion. Whatever. We can talk about it when I'm more in a mood and ready for that. I can talk about that. but let's carry on with this. Yeah. So Jean-Pierre Mao, Earth billionaire coded, as you say. But yeah, I think we get the answer that he thinks he's, like you say, the hero in his own story, I think is the what we're getting from this. And he does make also, demands of her, and because it's that stuff about and he also if he could, he'd be putting his arm out of this coon around Avasarala's shoulders and going, we affect billions of lives. We are great.
No, but he
aren't
also,
we? You know,
he also,
we're powerful.
I think this is a mistake on his part, and I think it exposes his stupidity. Ultimately, like he talks to Avasarala in a condescending, arrogant way, and that is not how you get Avasarala on your side.
No,
he's nowhere near as smart as Avasarala. So, he's very hubristic.
Yeah. He gets what's coming to him in terms of like the legal things that have gone on and everything. That's the problem is he's got what's coming to him, in as much as everybody now knows that he's an evil billionaire. everybody in the system knows that because of Eros and stuff. He also got what's coming to him in terms of him and his family's financials have been taken control of, and that's, you know, that's where his power stems from. Yeah, so, you know, he's like worried about that, you know.
He is an expression, actually, of because even now, you know that thing Abbasarella said in a previous episode about governments are more powerful than corporations, basically. He's very much that spirit of, because I think it's true of corporations now, they think they're more powerful than government because of the way they've been treated. They've been courted
and
their dicks up by government. So they think they're more powerful than government, but...
But government can still cut things instantly. Yeah, you know, and change things, and change policy on a whim, and have an army and stuff. Yeah, yeah.
Chris is muted, I think.
Yeah, have you muted yourself, Chris?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh!
How long have you been talking?
I don't know. I made some really good points, and
I thought you'd been quiet. I thought, he's just letting us ramble on. It's not, you know.
It's something to do with the keyboard combination on the show and the thing. Anyway. I've completely forgotten what I'm going to say now. I jumbled up all my...
Sorry. I mean, why am I sorry?
I should be apologising to myself, really. Yeah. I'm sorry, Chris. That's okay. But, you know, these mistakes happen. And also, random thing, is that Spy is actually just wearing a normal T-shirt.
Yeah, but it does... It does work for his look. He is like, you know, as Spy, it works very well, I think. Just blend in and don't look anything in particular.
Culture. Mm.
Yeah, he just looks like a normal guy. Okay. Yeah, Spy. I mean, I like him. And to be honest, considering that you didn't know his name, Drew, that I thought that, like, he would be in it a lot less.
But I think it's because nobody says his name much.
Mm.
I think he's why, yeah.
Yeah, he's Avicerella's sidekick.
Yeah, he's good at that.
Yeah, he's very good. I like him. He's got a good presence.
I like the way he's like, he defers to her. She's clearly in charge, and he is subservient, and he does what she says. But in a way where he, like, without him, he seems confident in his masculinity. You know what I mean? He's able to be masculine and subservient,
and also confident in his. Role as her physical protector as well.
I think.
You know, he doesn't. That's why he doesn't. He doesn't sort of. He doesn't let that boundary get blurred when he's talking about being a trap and stuff. He's clear that he's going to be the muscle in any situation as well. You know, so he's like, and as you say, he's confident with it. He's not.
Although I think part of that might come from the fact that he's Avicerella's son's. Like brother-in-arms or colleague in the same platoon section, something like that. So there's a personal connection there that I think makes makes him a bit more familiar.
Yep, for sure.
But then again, you know, like, she needs people she can trust, so...
Do you see anything like... Not in the sense that they would act on it, but is there, for you, a little bit of sexual tension between them?
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Because I was reading that and, yeah.
Yeah, like a little bit, like not, you know, just.
You've been looking at all the porn listings again, haven't you? And it's my stepsister and my stepbrother, and it's my friend's mum and all that stuff, isn't it?
Yeah.
I don't know why that's so fucking popular. I'm guessing.
You get the sense that, like, they're both aware of it, they're both, like, playing with it, but it would never go any further, kind of thing. They just enjoy sitting
there. I mean, when I was growing up, like, there were a few friends' mums that were like, yes, please. So,
I never really had that.
Not real.
Yeah, no, not the one. Sisters was more.
Friends, yeah, sisters. Big sisters was often a thing.
Yeah, But the step bro, step mom, blah blah. I think it's just it's a little bit of taboo, isn't it? It's a safe taboo.
It's a safe taboo,
which gives it a little bit of whatever spice.
So, all of that aside. Do we have much more on Avicerella? That was quite short.
In it a lot, but she's kind of she's interspersed in other people's scenes apart from that one, really.
Yeah,
because she also has a bit with Erin Wright again, doesn't she?
Oh yeah, yeah, and So Erin Wright genuinely feels to be like...
He's very deflated, you know.
Deflated, yeah, yeah.
And he realizes he's going to carry the can for Mo because Mo's not reachable, you know.
Yeah, basically.
But he also mentions somebody else, though, in that conversation.
Who does he mention?
And Erin Wright mentions in that conversation Mo's family. We're talking about Mo's family.
His eldest daughter.
Right. Yeah.
His eldest daughter is not Perky Tech, is it?
No.
Okay. But is it someone that we've already met?
No.
Oh, okay.
It's weird. Hamish and I have been having some back channel conversations about this character, and I said I wouldn't.
You said you would. No, you no. You said you would enjoy messing with Chris.
No. I have feelings about this character and I don't want to telegraph them because it'll give away something.
So. Oh, yeah. Positive or negative feelings?
Mm-mm.
Oh.
So now you've made me the bad guy for bringing it up when I thought I was leading into your little ha-ha.
Well, you have a weird kind of foreign accent, so you're probably the baddie.
That's true. That's fair enough.
Well, that's one way to paint the OPA, isn't it? I don't know. Like, because to me, Erin Wright seems a little bit sincere, but I don't know. I suppose he could just be.
I think he's just, like I said, deflated as the feeling. I think he realizes he's on the way down. You know?
I think he is sincere.
Well, he's given up a lot more. He's given up a lot more information than he would have a few months before or whatever, you know.
But I also think he's sincere all the way through, actually. But I think he's very morally flexible.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I don't, like, he could have just been blinded by optimism.
Or greed.
Yeah, I'm kind of talking. I'm being teleological. I know things from
Because the thing is, it's like the protomolecule is.
What's teleological? That's good. That's a good word. I rarely hear words I don't know anymore, unless they're like technical words.
I'm going to find it hard to define it myself.
I'd be the same with some words that I use as
hopefully
well.
Hopefully, I've not misused it.
Oh God, sorry. I hope not. But So he mentions Clarissa Mao for the first time.
Showing evidence of design or purpose, especially in natural... That's a really bad definition. The way I think of it is like...
You know more about it from the outside.
Like future knowledge, basically, yeah.
No, that's fair enough. I like medicine. It does me good to admit and acknowledge my own ignorance from time to time. Because I'm terrible.
When you hear a new word, that's a cool thing because you've got a new.
Yeah, but I'm quite often I'll go, then I'll go and look it up later. And...
you'll nod along and
What's the word?
Teleological.
Teleological. Let's even get a better definition.
Cool. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to make this a whole thing.
No, I mean we've learned a word today. That's something you could take home with you at home, folks, isn't it? Teleological. I
when you said it, it sounds like someone's call my bluff now, because Drew's got me thinking that I meet you all the time now.
Teleological, the practice of making
Here's a simple definition, in philosophy, relating to or involving the explanation of phenomena in terms of the purpose they serve rather than of the cause by which they arise, is a simple definition. Teleological means starting from the end and reasoning back.
Right, yeah, gotcha.
Yeah, explaining.
I see what you're saying there. Yeah. Future knowledge is a pretty good.
Oh man, that's a great word, isn't it?
Another word. I had a word and it's gone out my head.
I always think analog. About teleology when playing Civ 5.
Because like, you're playing the future of all these.
Exactly. Yeah. You're playing in the Bronze Age and going, okay, when can I build the Eiffel Tower? You know.
Teleologicality aside, I do think that, like, and again, this is your teleology speaking, maybe, or thinking, is that, like, the protomolecule at this stage, like, I mean, we know, or we presume that it is being used as a weapon on Ganymede, or being tested as a weapon on Ganymede from the information that we've got. But also, it is sort of implying that it can be used to build things. It can be used to...
Yeah, we've now got three proton molecules, story strands.
Yeah, yeah, three sort of almost applications, isn't it? You've got the weapon, the building,
I think there's something in the show about, like a tool can potentially be many things, and, like, what you use it for reveals a lot about you.
Yes.
You know what I mean? If you see a stick and you see a weapon, then that says something about you. If you see a stick and see a lever, that says something else about you. You know, it's, yeah. And the fact that, yeah, we choose to use it as a weapon rather than for building says things.
Well, like someone is choosing to use it a weapon. But, of course, Miller and Julie are choosing to use it to build...
Something
on Venus.
Well, you're assuming Miller and Julie are still involved, yeah.
Yeah, or Strickland is perhaps using it to cure children of genetic disorders.
I think by the end of the show, it's very clear.
Yeah, by the end of the episode, we're pretty clear what's happening, because they have a failed experiment, which is a child dead.
Yeah, there's failed experiments.
Yeah, I think we're pretty, and we know that what they're doing is making the. I mean, it's explicit. The woman scientist says it. It's explicit. She says that, basically what they're doing with the children is turning them into protomolecule monsters. There's not really any ambiguity about that.
I don't think it's quite outright explicit, but all the pieces
all
are there.
All the pieces
that point in a very, it points.
But she has, there's some, okay.
If at this point they genuinely were trying to cure the children, that would at this point be a twist, because that's not how it's presented.
Okay, yeah. Yeah. I mean, it could have... You're right there, Hamish?
Yeah, I was just having a twist.
He's doing the twist.
Oh, the twist, ah. I suppose so. Yeah, like, because the thing, it broke out of the... So is May the monster on Ganymede? Poker face, okay. We don't know.
Well, we know she's not the one they incinerated.
Yeah, well, both Prax thinks not, but yeah.
No, Prax knows not. Well, it's his own daughter.
Assume we trust his knowledge.
Yeah, we trust him not. Yeah. But it's, yeah. I mean, I love that whole thing from the grenade. Amos is really cool there. Where he says, "Grenade!" And then he gets it, opens it, or throws it out, jumps across, and then the pressure wave bumps him right over the table. And
really cool. First time when the grenade comes through the door and Amos shouts "grenade" and dives towards it, I was like, "No, he's gonna jump on the grenade and sacrifice himself." For like a split second, and then it's like, "Oh, he speared through the fucking door." there's a nice bit of storytelling where they're all just looking at the door. And, like, you hear the story play out.
That's what I was going to say. That was the coolest. It was all done by sound effects, and then the sort of little wisps of smoke or whatever it is coming through the vent, and then whooshing back out as the air.
An alarm, and then.
It was all story told in noise. Definitely. Yeah.
I found that very amusing.
And then they come through and put it all back together.
Well, and then Holden goes, "Stay back, like I'll go through." And in turn, they all go, "No, fuck no, what?"
No, they'll say it in different ways. Yeah, there's all three. Chris will give us the exact lines because he's that kind of guy. I think Naomi says, "No way." No, Naomi says, "Oh fuck no." I can't remember now. Chris can give us all the lines because I've got to find
the scene.
Well, it's really near the end, so probably about 5 minutes before the end, 4 minutes before the end, somewhere around there.
Oh, I just saw the scene on Venus. Hang on.
I forgot there's another scene. Right, probably 6 minutes then. I'm guessing. I'm just wildly guessing.
Okay, so it's after they incinerated.
Yeah, it's just after that, yeah.
And then after that, is it the last scene?
No. Because the last scene is when he says we're going hunting or something like that.
I think I'm going to struggle to find it, just because of the nature of the subtitles. Finding like a spoken phrase is kind of tricky. Mm. But what is interesting is, like, they're splitting up.
Yes. Yeah. Possibly for the first time in a long time. because they only really split up a little bit when they were like taken into custody and stuff like that. They didn't, you know, Holden went to the bridge and all that sort of thing. But they're, this is the first time they've like really split up, apart from when they were on downtime. Since then, probably, since they were on the
Donald clearly, it's clearly based on Naomi's discomfort with how Holden's behaving.
Well, it's partly, yeah, and also she still feels guilty about not being able to take more people off Eros.
Yeah, I think...
And that's why
I
she think... says she wants to help the woman who's got the somnambulist ship to fill it up as many people as possible.
I think it's Holden's behaviour that gives her the push, though. And then, and then that's like, oh, we can go and do this, which is going to be, you know, more useful right now.
Yeah. Well, she doesn't want to do more violence, presumably.
I don't think it's necessary. Yeah, she definitely doesn't enjoy doing violence without knowing exactly why she's doing it, and it being her decision, I think, is important. But I think it's more.
Oh, sorry.
It's
I'm
more.
Facing, yeah.
It's more. She's uncomfortable with Holden. Seems to be becoming. I think is more it though.
Well, he does seem to be becoming a little bit unhinged.
Yeah, I think so, yeah. Yeah. I don't think he's wrong. I don't think he's in the wrong. I don't think he's behaving, at this point at least, I don't think he's behaving incorrectly, given what they know and what they're doing.
But he's on a bit of a crusade.
It's a bit out of character for him.
I think it's like he's acting with too much certainty and not enough hesitation. You
Chris,
know, like...
is that a background picture of your own place?
No. It's just I was fading in and out of it, so I thought I might... That would be kind of...
I've thought about doing that. I've got a green screen, and I've thought about doing that, having a green screen, like wandering about whilst recording a bit.
Yeah,
and then setting it at the monitor and playing it back as a background, and then suddenly, you know, partway through a stream or whatever, I'll just walk past myself.
Yeah. I've seen people do that with making themselves a cup of tea. So yourself comes in, makes a cup of tea for you.
Puts
and
it down
it
the table,
yeah.
I do need space, Miss. I'll be right back.
Cool. I'm a bit sad that Prax and Amos are splitting up. I thought they were a great duo. I hope they meet up again together.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember what the split is. He goes with...
Naomi.
And... No, wait a minute. Amos goes with... Oh, for goodness sake. I've watched this episode twice today alone, and I'm forgetting it all.
So, Alex, Holden, and Prax.
And Prax go... Yeah, that's who's left, yeah. Yeah. Because Holden tries to send Prax with Amos and Naomi, and he says, no, I want to stay with you.
Yeah. Because
presumably, he wants to know more about the protomolecule creatures and find out if his daughter's one of them or whatever, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe he will talk the protomolecule monster around. Maybe there will be a peaceful solution to this. Maybe he'll be like, "Dear daughter, it's me, your father. You don't have to do all this destruction and damage. You can come home and live with me." Yeah, exactly. That's what because maybe the show is like,
and we need to have a secret from Drew while he's away. Oh, damn it. Keep me not to do it. And so when he comes back, we can just suddenly be back on something else, and then not until he watches back the show will he see.
And then I and said, "That's not an elephant. That's my wife."
Oh my goodness, that's a good one.
That's a good old Flintstones joke. That one.
That would be a mammoth.
Oh yeah, yeah, that's the one. Yeah, yeah.
I had to take you to Tusk on that one.
Oh, that is awful, awful. Oh. I don't know, like it could be the case that this show is like leading us in one direction, which is the protomolecule monster is bad and we're gonna have to shoot it, but in fact, because Prax is there, it might do the bait and switch and be like, oh, actually he can soften the protomolecule with the Christmas spirit and then
take his shirt off.
Yeah,
why did you use your own torso as one of the thumbnails in that video, by the way, Chris?
Do you think that wasn't my own torso? Oh, right. Yeah.
Oh, no, wait a minute. That suggests that Chris does have a slight, quite a muscly torso then.
It's not that
I'd
bad,
imagine
but...
you to be more hairy than that, you see.
No, I'm not. I'm pretty hairless. No, oh, no. no hair down there at all. Oh, no, look at that. You. Stark white, that is. Oof. That's the thumbnail.
Nipple.
So, but you've got a sense of the nipple.
Yeah, but that's a sense of the nipple, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, Drew, you are muted, mate.
I said Hamish's OnlyFans is leaking.
Well, my nipple's leaking, is it?
is he... sorry. So, one thing I noticed is that Prax is taking May's backpack with him.
Yeah.
Which, I don't know, is this Chekhov's cute pink backpack? Like, is this going to play a role? Yeah. this is so, like, because it's like, I get that there's a, like, it's like, well, I get that there'd be a personal meaning to it, but also, like, if you're going off on the hunt, bringing it with you seems a little bit like.
Well, I think he just wants to keep it as a piece, as a part of her, isn't it? It's his connection to her.
I think it's also he's hoping that he'll be able to give it back to her.
Yeah,
it's him. It's a.
Speaking of which, we've jumped ahead of one huge revelation.
Mm-hmm.
When Prax says to Naomi, "You've never lost a child."
Oh, and she did, didn't she? Yeah.
There's been hints of that previously. When they were, you know, when they were on the Doniger and they thought they were going to die because Shed's head had been taken off and they were running out of air. She says to Amos, I didn't get to say goodbye. And Amos says, to who? And she's like, never mind. So there have been the odd hints about that.
Yeah, it's not the only one. There's been a couple more.
Oh, so she's lost a child, but not to death. Okay.
Well, you saw the scene today, so you tell us. You've seen the scene. We don't want to give you some teleological explanation by accident. Today I learned.
She did say she lost a child, right? Does she say any more than that? I can't find the scene. I don't.
I don't think it is anymore. It's a very brief exchange, but yeah. He's like, you don't know what it's like to it. And she's like, fuck you, yes I do.
Yeah.
And we know it's a boy.
But I think in terms of, like, I don't know if I'm trying to break down the plot a little bit or welcome back, Drew, too.
Thank you very much.
Oh, do I need to flip around, don't I? Hang on, I'll be right back.
No, he's lost. We've lost them forever. Oh, no, there he is.
There we go. And then when Drew gets booted. Right. So, what was I going to say? So, but it seems like, so if I'm like sort of like, you know, using a bit of like fourth wall maths, right? and sort of like working out the storytelling cadence and all that kind of stuff. It feels like it's quite symbolic that he's taking the backpack, right? Like,
yeah, I mean, it's definitely symbolic, yeah.
And I just feel that may, pun aside, be the thing that brings the proto molecule over to the side. Maybe he becomes a member of the crew. You got Alex, you got James, you got Naomi, you got did I say Amos? Amos, Prax, and Proto.
Hang on, so you think it's going to be Prax and his now monstrous daughter, but he's
a Prax is the good guy and Proto is the one to protect him.
Yeah. You can see it. Yeah,
Proto maybe and Prax.
Proto will be like a really good gardener.
Oh my god, maybe like the garden of Proto. The protogen garden.
Proto molecule magic on the plants and just make them grow and stuff.
Yeah. Can you eat proto molecule, I wonder? Do you become proto molecule? That's. Oh, no, you don't need food if you're a proto molecule man or woman. proto person.
Do we know that? Do we know that for sure?
Well, what are they doing on Ganymede? Like, you know,
they might eat. They don't seem to need to. They don't seem to need to breathe, but
do they? I think they absorb radiation and stuff, don't they? So if he's
that would make sense.
So if Proto is just like walking along the surface of Ganymede, they're just soaking up a bit of radiation, all right?
Quite possibly, yeah. Like a plant.
So he just has to he has to nurture his child like you'd nurture a plant.
I like it. Yeah.
It's a good series, Christopher.
Mm. Well, it was
we enjoy your series.
It's sort of Drew's.
Oh no. This is your baby, Chris. This is your baby.
Drew put in the linchpin.
Did he? We didn't have
The key. The keystone.
Yeah, that's it. The pivot point. The fulcrum.
Yeah. Can we talk about? We're talking about the Rossi crew. What about Alex then?
Yeah.
So they didn't do any silliness with Alex this time around.
Oh no, they did. Well,
what do you mean
silliness, but there was more boring on the ship. I'm so quirky talking to the ship staff.
Right. Okay. Yeah, I get that. A little bit, I guess.
It's the self-narration exposition dumpiness of it that I think is bad. Drew and I talked about this. We're not going to tell you anything future, but we will talk. I'll try and talk in terms of this previous episode and this episode. And I think about it and I thought, what they are sort of showing is that he's a bit stir crazy, maybe. And being on the ship by himself all the time, a bit bored, yeah. And, pardon me. And that's why he's sort of exposition dumping a bit. And we did also think it's not just the writing as much as
the acting.
Do we want to go in with this? Because I gave away early on that Cass Anwar didn't play the shootout scene properly. You know, I kind of gave that away, and I wonder if he's Drew had an opinion on this as well that it doesn't.
So what's going on here is like they're trying to use the talking to the ship as a device to make exposition not sound like exposition, right?
But it does.
There's also the kind of trope of, you know, like sailors personifying their ships, talking to your ship. It's trying to play into that. And I think it's supposed to come across as like sort of like quirky and charming. But I don't think the actor is good enough for it to come off like that. And his only modes really are, he just comes across as kind of a bit creepy all the time. A bit,
Stir crazy?
No, I said so. In the chat we had earlier, you said creepy, I think.
Yeah. I think it's a different word that was closer. But yeah, I think the actor just doesn't have enough sort of charisma or whatever to pull off what they're going for. They can't. It's kind of, you know, it should be a little bit, not as extreme, but a little bit Jack Sparrow, a little bit like, you know.
A bit more over the top than it is.
I got a theory about this.
You said Drew.
Shifty. He comes across as shifty a lot.
So I saw a film a long time ago with John Cusack and Hilary Duff and Ben Kingsley called War Inc. Which is
I'm a huge Cusack fan, John Cusack fan.
I can't remember if it's I liked it a lot at the time, but I was quite young when it came out, like teenagery young. But it's kind of wacky and I quite enjoyed it. It was a commentary on the war in Iraq, if I remember correctly. But it might have been something else, but basically the John Cusack character talks to his computer in his aircraft or something like that, and at the time you think, oh, that's so cool, like he's got a relate, you know, like he's talking to his car or whatever, and it's like, yeah, that's amazing, and he's like exposition dumping into his car, but it's like it's his car's listening and being sympathetic and everything.
Yeah.
And now we live in the age of Google Assistant and Siri and what's the Microsoft one? Got Alexa.
Cortana.
Cortana, that's it, right? And we see how lame those all turned out to be, and how we just really just want to turn them off, to be honest. Like, the fact that you can't turn off a Google Assistant properly on your phone is just stupid. And now I think since then, talking to your computer has become a lot less cool.
Well, I tell you, for Hamish and I imagine our reference point for that kind of idea is probably Knight Rider, right?
Yeah.
Talking to Mr. Feeney has a
or,
car.
Or Buck Rogers in 21st Century.
Mm. With Tweaky.
Tweaky, but he also had the little oh, Professor the, Robot thing around his neck and stuff. You know?
Yeah.
I'm sure that's what inspired Flavor Flav.
So I think
it does depend on the actor to make that seem
I think with hindsight now I'm thinking that maybe Cassandra
I think it would be okay for you, Hamish, to mention what we know about the actor, the meta thing that we know about the actor. Like this isn't what's coloring my idea of his acting. In terms of his acting, I don't fucking care, but I think it is pertinent information.
Okay, well, I wonder if it was coloring my view, you see, because this rewatching these scenes, I'm wondering if that's like in the back of my head. Well, basically, he's been accused of sexual misconduct and stuff and lost his job on this show. And hasn't had much work since. And then and a lot of historical things have come up, and you know
he's a bit Me Too-y.
Okay.
So there's quite a Me Too-y thing going on, yeah.
Oh fuck! I don't like liking him now. Fuck you.
See, this is it. I didn't want to say it because you liked Alex at this point, and that's why I didn't want to say it. But Drew forced me into
this. This is the point. I think the first time I watched it. So my opinions were formed before I knew any of that. Early on in the show, I was like, I didn't dislike him. I kind of liked him in some scenes. I thought he was okay, but it was these scenes with him in the ship that just ruined his character for me. He just, like I say, comes across as whatever that word was they used again. I forget.
Shifty.
He just comes across as shifty. Yeah.
Okay. Is it quite a bad Me Too as well? Is it?
Well, you can look him up if you want. Cass Andor is the name of the actor. It's like allegations stage.
Okay. I mean, I don't know. I don't know. That
in June 2020, Alcon Entertainment hired an independent firm to investigate over 30 allegations of sexual harassment and assault made against Anvar. In November 2020, Alcon announced that Anvar would not be returning for the sixth and final season of The Expanse.
Okay. Did they do a he died off screen thing or something? I don't know.
No, they literally do a Poochie return to his own planet.
That's amazing.
He's been on two TV things since then, and that's it. Whereas before that, he was in things like two or three times a year.
The reason I'm okay getting into it, because he's not a main character. He is a side character. Like pilot, he's on the main crew, but yeah.
Okay. Okay. Well, that's a shame. But 30's a lot.
Even that aside, I just don't think the actor. This show, the casting in this show is fucking exquisite.
It is almost a lot of side characters and small characters. Yeah, there's all sorts of things.
But I don't think he ever really communicated that role in the way that he was supposed to.
And I think they had a chance when he was openly doing a bad job on that, like that shootout thing at the end of series one. I think they could have sort of replaced the character, the actor then or whatever. But then, you know, maybe they had a contract, because that's the other thing is you've got to give people to get people to commit to these long-term things. So they have to be able to, you know, because they have to turn other things down if they're committed to a long-term series. They probably have to have a pretty watertight contract.
When I watched Ty and That Guy, I did get a sense of reading between the lines. This was the actor they were talking about when they talk about actors who don't want to, like, they just want to be a badass all the time. They want their character.
You don't have to read between the lines. They mention it in context with that scene and stuff,
Whereas the other characters, like, they all lean into the flaws of their character and you know, the sort of, you know, actor.
Well, like I say, you know, Ty Frank does say that, like, the auditioned like loads and loads of sort of action-y actors to do the Amos part, and only two people got it at all out of like 30 or 50 or 100 or whatever it was, you know.
And who was the second one? And that was Elias Tvaldis.
Yes,
it's Elias Tvaldis or whatever his name is.
Tvaxis.
Tvaxis. Adam Jensen.
He was the other one, and that's why they brought him in as they gave him a partner in the series because he was so good they wanted him.
Yeah, actually, I do quite like him. I played there's a video. There's a video on YouTube where he plays through Deus Ex.
And, I really enjoy that.
Yeah, I thought that was quite interesting.
Which Deus Ex? The ones he's in.
The ones he's in.
And he's being interviewed at the time, essentially, isn't he? Like, telling anecdotes about the production and stuff, and it's fun.
Yeah, he seems like a nice chap.
He does. Yeah,
maybe he should have been Alex.
That
would have been, because he doesn't need to be a badass. His voice is already cool. Like that's you know, he can. Actually, that's kind of a thing, isn't it? It's like
I think the Alex character needed a bit more flamboyance. I think it needed to be played a bit camper.
A bit
more leaning into the cowboy stuff, and
He just sort of says that stuff, but he never really
says it. But yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It is like he's reading it. Yeah. He phones it in a bit, shall we say?
I don't think
we shouldn't really be. I'm not sure I wanted Chris to know all this. I'm really not.
How do you feel, Chris? Is this gonna ruin it for you?
I don't know. Like, we'll find out. I mean, you say you're comfortable because he's not a main character, and he returns to his home planet on season.
He doesn't get any more main than he's been. Let's put it that way.
Okay.
I think he gets less main. The only big scenes he's had on his own are these terrible ones on the ship that you just want to skip through.
Okay. I mean,
And the only other memorable scene with him as an active like participant is him making the lasagna, which it's a very nice scene, but that's literally the only one I can think of. Everybody else, you've got the scene where they did this and the scene where they said that cool thing, and like, but with him, it's like he made lasagna once.
And it didn't even look that nice.
Space
lasagna
together,
made from scabs.
It was a nice scene,
and,
but I literally can't think of another scene of him being cool or whatever.
It looked dry as fuck, it did.
Oh, it was made from scabs and space dust, remember?
Yeah, exactly, yeah. It's
Sawdust and sadness.
Sawdust and sadness. where were we with that? Like...
talking about the Alex scenes, and I was going to say connect that with towards the end when he turns up to save them, as it were. Well, he does because he brings the ship. But when he does that part, he talks about we were thinking and we were doing, and Amos goes we.
And even that, I think he delivers wrong. I think not Amos. I think Alex delivers. That's supposed to be like we, and Amos is kind of like, like it's supposed to be that, like you're a little bit embarrassed. Yeah, I talked to the ship kind of thing. But instead, he sort of blanks it, like he's actually embarrassed.
Yeah,
like,
I think he
plays stuff wrong.
Okay, but I did like the slingshotting the ship.
That was cool.
I don't think he acts that very well either, though. Again, I don't think this is about the actor. It is about the actor, but it's not about what we know externally. It's about how he wasn't
just
about
the performance. Yeah, I don't think he was that good.
He's not that good.
I mean, I'm thinking more of just the idea and
the idea is excellent in
the space thing scenes.
Yeah. The external ship scenes are great, and the idea is great. And
the ship sort of whooshing towards like another moon, and then suddenly bouncing off the atmosphere, gravity field and stuff.
See, it could have been cool to have seen that rather than from Alex's point of view, to see it from the external point of view, and then a map point of view. So you could have seen it like
in a computer game where you see a racing around a track or whatever, and you can see the mini map.
In Indiana Jones where you see the plane on the map going.
That's good. They don't do that enough these days. That was good.
I love.
Well, they stopped doing it 20 or 30 years before that as well.
He was
evoke that.
borrowing that from the 1930s and 40s serials. And yeah. I love it as a.
But then it's set in when's Indiana Jones set? 30s, 40s?
30s. Yeah. Well, yeah.
30s, yeah.
Which one you want, but yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Early to mid 30s generally.
The good one is set in the 30s, yeah.
Yeah. So. Well, you like Templar Doom, don't you?
No, I don't like Temple of Doom, but I think it's better than the third one. I think the third one is appalling, and everybody fucking loves it.
I won't forget.
I think the first one is the only really good one.
And the first one's for the Ark. The Ark, yeah.
The Lost Ark.
See, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I do like the third one.
There is a semi-valid criticism of Raiders of the Lost Ark, which is that the story would have played out no differently at all had Indiana Jones not been there. But that's not the point. That's not the point of the story. You're seeing his story through it. Yeah, he doesn't need to.
That's the thing. I mean, to be honest, you could have killed most of the characters, and Hitler would have probably found someone else to replace him, right?
Like, yeah.
You know, the one character that you really would needed was Hitler, and he wasn't even in it, right?
And what? Hitler flop. He is in Indiana Jones.
Not the first one.
Hang on. He's in the third one.
Played by Mr. Bronson from Grinch Hill.
Yes. Oh God. Yeah. Yeah.
And but no, for me, who's also first an admiral one, in Empire Strikes Back.
The first one's kind of moody and slow, and has some lovely cinematography in it, and tells like a cool adventure story.
The stuff with the ship and everything is really good.
Yeah. The second one, they try to amp it up a bit. They realize they were making movies for kids, so it becomes more of a kids' film. And then the third one is
It's his new girlfriend that he's showcasing a lot.
Yeah, who's intentionally annoying. Like, it's not the actress's fault. But anyway, and then the third one is just like slapstick fucking comedy. And the bit at the beginning, like, here's how I got my whip. Here's how I got my hat. Here's how I got the scar on my chin.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, I mean, the CGI of the two boats coming together.
That seems to be a bit of a Lucas Spielberg thing, though, doesn't it? To overexpose things.
But the slapstick bothers me. Like the bit where in the castle and they're untying it and the chairs are revolving and they keep going through the wall. That's literally like farcical slapstick. And then the bit with the plane going through the tunnel and the wings come off and the pilot's like, oh, it's like.
I like that. Like,
it's too silly. I quite like it as a silliness.
Yeah, Indiana Jones is supposed to be silly, really.
No, I think the mood was right in the first one for me. It was darker in the first one, but it
still had the silliness.
But the comedy in the first one comes through his naivety. And that's enjoyable, not through his like clumsy clownishness.
Naivete. I suppose. I mean, it's what it is.
Yeah. I mean,
there's five of them.
Oh God, they made another one.
Well, you're not seeing the fifth.
The fifth one's
considerably better than the fourth one. When I watched, I rewatched the fourth one, and it's not that bad. It's if you take it in the context of all of them, it's not that bad. Again, it's diminishing returns after the first one.
I think the fourth one, if you took all that footage, could be edited into a good film. It was just weird and jumbled.
Maybe.
And some scenes were way too long, and other scenes were way too short, and like it was that kind of.
What did you think of the fifth one then?
I've not seen the fifth one, so I didn't even know there was a fifth one. Honestly.
Dial M for Murder or something, is it?
I do wish
something like
I wish
that. The Dial of Destiny, I think it's called.
Oh right, yeah.
I want them to hand over to a younger actor. I don't think you can keep
that. That was what they were going to do in the third one.
The fourth one.
But they didn't.
Shia LaBeouf became a bit mad. Yeah.
Yeah. But also in the fifth one. I don't want to spoil the fifth one for you because it's worth watching, I think.
Not just for the sake of like ID politics stuff, but I think I'd like him to hand off to like a young girl.
You're saying this without having seen the fifth one though.
Oh, is that what they do?
Yeah. Watch the fifth one. Watch the fifth one. I'd say it's better than the fourth one.
I'll give it a watch. Okay.
Yeah, give it a watch. Yeah. It's worth. I'm not saying rush off and see it because it's such a great.
No, no. I
but if you if you're looking for to fill a couple of hours one day,
yeah,
you'll do. You could do worse. You know.
Okay.
I'm surprised at both of you. I've seen something that you two haven't. It's weird. I'm usually like way behind everybody else.
Speaking of John Cusack, though, do you like 2012?
Yeah, I quite like it.
I love Twin
Stars. I mean, it's terrible, and the science in it is atrocious.
Absolute nonsense.
As a film, it's way better than a lot of those films that try to do that bad science as a corny thing. You know, it's not
a proper,
like Armageddon, fucking Armageddon. I mean,
I
watched Armageddon a second time a few years later because I couldn't believe it was as bad as I thought it was. I remember. And I wanted I really did regret it. I regretted that. That was like literally, you know the old joke of, oh, that's 2 hours of my life I'll never get back. I really did.
Oh, it's terrible.
You know, in the pit of my stomach, I felt fucking angry.
For a film about an asteroid hurtling towards the Earth, it finds a way to be fucking boring.
Yeah.
Which is impressive. But no, 2012 for me delivers exactly what you want from a disaster film, which is just
silliness going to shit. There was another one recently that I started watching and had to give up on because it was partly because the science was so bad that even a kid...
Moonfall.
Eh? Yes, Moonfall.
Yep. Same director,
even
right?
Even a kid would go, for fuck's sake, no.
Moonfall, it's the same director. It's Roland Emmerich, who did Independence Day.
Yeah, quite like some of his stuff.
I enjoy Independence Day.
Carry on.
But Moonfall, I really had to switch my brain off.
I couldn't switch it off enough.
When the bits when the moon actually fucking crashes into the Earth are like so
enjoyable. He did Universal Soldier as well.
I didn't know that.
And The Day After Tomorrow, oh my goodness. 2012.
Yeah, The Day After Tomorrow is okay.
Yeah, Moonfall was the most recent one.
I know his films are terrible, but I am a bit of a Roland Emmerich fan. Like, I do tend to enjoy his films.
I thought he'd done another one, but I can't see. I can't remember what the film is, but I was thinking if I see his listing, I'll know which one it was.
But what you said, the science in 2012 was bad, but what's wrong with neutrinos mutating? That's literally like the first 5 minutes. The sun is doing whatever, and the neutrinos are mutating. Love it.
Yeah. Oh no, I'm thinking of the guy that did The Mummy, Stephen Summers, is it? That's who I'm thinking of. I mean, I know who Roland Emmerich is as well, but I was just...
Yeah. Anyway, we're boring, Chris.
Anyway. I was checking the scene between Sleazy Science Man and Bald Military Man.
Oh yeah, we got there. Back to this. I forgot we were talking about The Expanse for a recorded show.
I like their chemistry now.
Yes.
They've warmed to each other.
Yeah, and
their chemistry makes them both more acceptable, if you know what I mean.
Yes,
both,
they're good for each other.
They're like hearty adversaries, you know.
Well, they're like those kind of buddy cop movies from the 80s where they're winding each other up, and neither one of them's a good guy, and then they turn into a good guy, a couple of good guys, they
kind of bond over actually having some science to do, and both being curious, and both being, and that's kind of lovely.
Yeah.
The idea about the reinforcing one probe with the bits from another one and everything's good.
So the atmosphere is extra corrosive on Venus, presumably as a result of the protomolecule, right?
Inherently.
Partly, but well, it's
oh, yeah, you mean, oh, extra,
it's
yes.
Yeah, it's temperature. Yeah. The temperature on Venus as well is really, really high. Venus is the hottest planet in the solar system.
Ah, yes. I
think Saturn's sexier.
So they reinforce
Uranus.
Uranus is sexiest, obviously.
it's interesting that our solar system. I don't know where uniform came from.
Right, okay.
Universe, not uniform. I don't know. I jumbled up the words in my head.
To be clear to everybody watching, it's early morning for all of us.
Actually, I've been up for ages.
But our solar system kind of has like two boobs in the middle, right? If you think, Saturn and Jupiter.
Well,
they're quite
disparate sizes.
That's fine. They're I'm okay both, with that.
I don't know, bother me but, either. But it's just
and only one of them's got a nipple.
Yeah, the other one's quite smooth.
So it's
different kinds of storms on the surface, in the atmosphere, rather.
It's like real boobs.
what about the rings?
So,
Piercings, I suppose. I don't like pierced nipples.
I don't like piercings at all.
Obviously. I'm not big on piercings at all either. Yeah, that's true.
I'm not usually a big piercings person, but sometimes I have a little soft spot for the big hoop earrings for some reason.
Oh, earrings are different.
I like chubby
big,
hoop
big
earrings.
Big hoopy, yeah, but it's kind of a 70s thing, isn't it?
So boobs aside, So they reinforce one probe with the scrap from the other.
Yeah, they take the shielding off one probe to like give it extra shielding,
and then
they drop lower to give it less time going through the atmosphere to get where it's going. Yeah.
We also noticed that the Martian ship, also sort of seemingly monitoring Venus, is not doing anything at all. Like
That's not a science ship. That's just keeping an eye on them.
Yeah, all we know about it is it looks like a similar ship to the Rocinante. That kind of ship.
And
now I'm going to have to look that up.
Is it so they're not watching what's happening on Venus, and they're not watching what necessarily
they're probably trying to see what they can see on Venus, but not being a science ship, they're not going to be able to see much. But they're keeping an eye on the Earth ship and trying to get a sense of what is it discovered and that kind of thing. But...
Yeah, that kind of thing. Like it's just like general reconnaissance type of thing, but also. Just to make sure, so just to keep an eye in the area, I guess.
I would imagine, because we know Mars is kind of like better, higher technology, blah, blah, blah. So you would think there would be a ship on the way from, like a science ship on the way from Mars, but I guess it's just further away, so Earth got there first. But that's
because this was launched very early on. This was launched straight after.
Yeah.
Sorry, I just saw you're in a threatened then.
Okay, the plan works, and then they discover this.
Yep.
What can we make of this? That's
clearly Julie.
Julie, and then Miller, Julia Miller.
Yeah, you can see Miller just standing off to the side there. Yeah.
Yeah, he's got a new hat.
It's actually weirdly wearing a clown hat.
So this looks like some construction project, doesn't it? Like this is these look like structures, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they do talk about something being structured, but also it does look like an impact crater as well.
Yes. Yeah, it looks
It's like splashes of whatever hit are on the outside, and the middle part has got the bounce back. You know, when impact craters have that sort of central bit that sometimes is sticking up again. Just like if you drop something in water, that happens to solid things as well, differently.
Okay.
But yeah, it's obviously protomolecule. Let's cut to the fucking chase here and stop messing about. It's protomolecule and lots of it.
But has it done? Is there anything there that we can see that's actually done?
We don't really see anything.
We just see
an impact crater full of strands of protomolecule. That's all we see.
I think it's reasonable to read those things as structures. That looks like something that is being built to me.
It looks like something that's being built to me. And they talk about buildings, so I'm assuming that like early structures, like we're not talking, this is not the finished article.
This is the foundation.
Yeah. But there's other bits and pieces, like...
Oh, you muted yourself.
It's the space bar. It's the space bar that does
is it? Is that what it is?
Right, yeah. Yeah, like it there's some, it like in motion, it looks a lot more mystical. Like it looks a lot more like magical. I don't know what is happening with this part of my background. Is it too much light or not enough light or the wrong color light?
Well, you can adjust it in the program, or you can adjust your light, I suppose. There you go. When you move it, spoils it. Oh, that's pretty cool though. Were you in the back, you in the picture?
Me in the picture?
Yeah. It's centered on you now.
Oh, right, yeah.
Whereas it was like off to one side a minute ago.
The thing.
I mean, it looks, if I may be so bold as to suggest what it looks like, somewhere else we've seen the prop molecule where it was building a structure was on the engine of the Anubis.
It does look like that. Yeah. And I swear somebody at some point, possibly on the Arbogast, says like it's building something.
Structures or something. Yeah, something's mentioned on Arbogast. Yeah.
And Julie talks about the work not being done and the building, So there's obviously some kind of construction project of some sort on there, right? Mm-hmm. Now, what might happen? This is a prediction, a Chris prediction. I think what that mess is going to swallow up the Martian military ship.
What do you mean by swallow up?
So you see, on the Anubis where they turned on the reactor and it was like, and it was reaching out to them. I think it will do that with the Martian ship.
Okay. Like literally.
Why not the Arbogast? What's your...
Because the Arbogast has Perky Tech on it, who I'm assuming comes back.
Because they gave her an actual name and not just Perky Tech.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I mean, I think otherwise, if it wasn't for that, I would have thought distinctly possible it could have been, it could have been either of those ships. But also, it sort of lends itself to the cadence of the plot, because it's like, oh, the protomolecule swallows up the Martian ship, and then like a load of people on Mars start thinking Earth has a weapon. A lot of people on Earth start thinking Mars has a weapon.
Well, not to lead you too heavily, but there's two ships in orbit and there's two prongs going upwards there.
So maybe, yeah, but one of them's going to escape.
What makes you think that?
Because of Perky Tech.
when did you give her a name? I don't. She's just, as far as I'm aware, she has just Perky Tech.
It's how she's credited, yeah. Perky Tech.
So,
yeah.
But maybe not. Maybe there'll be an episode. The next episode will be like a Perky Tech biopic type episode, and then suddenly killed at the end. You know, like.
Well, there is that spin-off, The Expanse, Perky Tech. Oh, you don't know about that.
Oh. Whoops.
Yeah, but it does look like two structures are coming up, and I think that it's gonna do something. It's interfering with radio signals as well. But it did that before, so we kind of know that maybe it wants to be left alone.
But, okay. So you have to guess, like right now, you get one guess. You say it's going to reach out to the ship, but that doesn't really answer the question as to what it's building. What is it building, Chris?
Well, I would imagine like a society or a city or
so it's terraforming Venus.
Yeah,
It's going to become another species.
It's building a terrapin colony on Venus. Did you say?
No, typing.
Theremin. The musician, musical instrument.
Brother Voodoo plays the theremin.
Does he play it well?
Yeah, he used to. He's not played it for a while, apparently. But yeah, he was quite good. It was one of the instruments he'd play in a band. Yeah,
that's cool. So
we'll say now we've got to mention somebody external to the show.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
So
yeah.
Now we've got to tell Laren to watch this episode.
Well, I mean, he's great. I like Aaron. He's a
He's a really good chap.
Enjoyable to watch. Yeah.
So, hello, Aaron. Nice to
hello, Aaron.
Yeah. I mean, I think we follow each other on Mastodon, so I think we know each other, even though we haven't spoken in.
Yeah, that, I believe but... you do. Yeah, yeah.
Mm. So the protomolecule is like, yeah, so I'm thinking terraforming, because that seems to be like a theme with Venus.
And it would be interesting to have another faction.
Yeah.
Earth, Mars, Belters, and Smurfs.
Protons? Protos? Proto-molar people.
Well, at some point, the proton.
We need to get a fourth person and to have a flag and everything as well, then, won't we? It's going to be awkward.
I mean, I kind of want to be proto people.
Yeah, you can switch sides.
You can be a Smurf if you want. Yeah.
It's blue to blue, so.
Blue to blue.
I do think of you more as a Muppet than a Smurf, though.
Like the lamp, not the rat. Christmas Carol.
the proper version of a Christmas Carol.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Definitive version.
That's the word I was looking for, thank you.
Yeah. We don't need any more Christmas carols now. They peaked with Muppets. If we missed out anything, if we,
I'm gonna look at my notes. I mean, I want to reiterate the Bobby bit. It's just fucking great.
Yeah,
I like the Bobby bit.
Build my crew,
team.
I do have a bit. Okay, so yeah. Professor Strickland, Dr. Strickland.
Yeah, I'm really not liking him.
So when he's with May, he picks in advance. He picks a little leaf with a chrysalis on it. So he's empathetic to know that at some point May's going to have qualms, and he's going to tell this little parable, this little Nietzschean parable about fucking will to power and all that. I mean, and it is very, he is a Nietzschean figure, because I think he thinks he's in the right, and he's literally creating Übermensch. Is that plural?
I believe so.
The parable of this butterfly that has to struggle. Yeah, that's it. Struggle, you know, the struggle being important and all that stuff.
What would that be in German? Because he is a bit Mengele-ish.
Yeah, and like pure Nietzsche. So for me, that makes him a more evil character, because he has enough empathy to know that May is going to be frightened and all this kind of stuff, pluck this chrysalis so he can tell her a story and get her back on board. And that, to me, that makes it, he understands entirely what he's doing to this little girl, and that makes it more evil.
Yeah.
He is a loathsome piece of shit.
He looks so evil.
He does look evil as well. Well, and his second in command doesn't, but she's, you know, she is evil. And I like, that's another Holden thing as well, is not helping her when she's obviously... Well, she's
she is blonde, which is a little bit evil.
I'm not gonna get into blonde women being evil or not, but...
Well, she's like, you know...
But yes, they are.
She also... She is also quite clearly beyond help, I think.
Yeah, I think that's fair. But he's not even trying to. He's not even offering any comfort. He's just like completely dehumanized her.
Yeah.
But the woman looks like an evil enabler rather than
an evil psychic.
Yeah. Like, not necessarily evil in themselves, but like perfectly happy to assist with evil things.
But I do think that links back to the idea that the protomolecule reveals something about the person wielding it. Like, you know, if you give it to him, he's a Nietzschean, he'll make Übermensch with it. If you give it to Jean-Pierre Mao, he's just, you know, he'll make a bioweapon and, you know, like that kind of thing. And it would be interesting to find out what, you know. Well, on Venus, as far as we know, and I think this is reasonable speculation, on Venus, we've got Julie Mao we've got the protomolecule being wielded by Julie Mao and potentially Miller.
Yeah.
And we know them to be good people.
What are you talking about?
We know them to be good people. So what are good people making with it? I think that's
the thing.
Yeah.
So I was having a look around for the thumbnail, right? I'm going to break your heart, Drew. I'm so sorry. And maybe yours too, Hamish.
Well, I thought you were going to use one of mine from earlier.
you can see her, that's her swinging past him.
No. There's... What are you talking about? You can hear it landing.
Yeah.
And he bleeds. Right. You don't bleed if somebody just waves their hand.
Yeah, exactly. It's like when she smacks it, when she brings that other soldier and smacks his head against the wall.
That one is quite brutal. Harsh. Yeah.
But anyway, that aside, there is another knife incident. Not a knife, an actual knife incident, but another thing like that.
The knife drama returns.
Yeah, or something like that. Yeah.
Absolute.
Although I like that you called it spoon thing in the actual.
Spoon
based physics.
Spoongate.
Spoongate with a knife, but the right after she says, you know when they burst into them having the soldiers and the scientists having their meal, and she says, you know. Do you want some pizza or something like that? Whatever her nervous, witty remark was. And then the gunfight breaks out, yeah?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah? when you watch it, one of the soldiers fires an automatic weapon sprayed across where the goodies, as it were, are standing, and nobody gets hurt.
Yeah, they just got lucky. Just went in between all the, you know. Mm. Yeah, yeah.
The others, you know, get knocked out of the way and everything. Yeah, that one guy is the guy on, as we're watching the screen, he's the second guy in from the left. The first guy goes down before he gets a proper shot, but this guy shoots across them. Nothing happens.
Two other things worth mentioning there. Prax asks for a gun. I think that's interesting.
Well, he wants to fight for his daughter, as his own words.
Yep. And then Amos takes a bullet for Prax.
But Amos also says, why am I always the one that gets shot? And then Alex says, why is he always, why are you always the one that gets shot?
Yeah, that was enjoyable.
I think that's why Alex gets less enjoyable.
Why is that?
Partly the left alone exposition dumping shit. Mm. Partly he's not Amos's sidekick as much as time goes on.
He was never great in that role, and Prax is immediately better. Like in the first scene together.
But Amos made Alex more. You know,
no, I agree. Yeah, funny. I see what you're saying, and I agree. Mm. Yeah.
But anyway, so are we gonna? We're not. You're not. Obviously, you two don't feel strongly enough that there's anything going on.
No,
there.
I'm fine with that. Like, maybe it was just slightly above their heads, or like, you know, there's so many like.
Oh yeah. Like, it's well known that when you pull the trigger down on a fully automatic, you just fire. Basically, the recoil's unmanageable.
Yeah. But I was waiting for you guys to come in with all this. You see, that's what I was expecting. But he doesn't. Right. He keeps a very straight. You know. Anyway,
hang on. I need to have a look to see if I have strong feelings.
I imagine that with futuristic guns. I think we even have like recoil suppressors now. I don't know how common they are or anything like that. I'm not American.
There's balancing things, yeah.
Yeah, but I'd imagine in the future that they like recoil is just not an issue.
Well, I think it probably still is to some extent.
I mean, they're also firing in 0.146 Earth gravity, which is going to have some effect on things.
That probably. Oh shit!
They ignore that the whole time they're in Ganymede. Yeah. They just ignore it, which kind of makes sense because that would have been. It would have been expensive and jarring to film it all like that, I think. I think it works better as it is.
What are they actually firing? Are they firing weapon, a bullets? Or are
there's no space guns as such. It's just more advanced projectile weapons, yeah.
Okay, I'm at the bit.
See, I'm kind of thinking that, like, if you did have guns of the future, could they not be like laser pointers where it's just like, and then it just burns a hole in something? Like,
you could have, but that's more difficult to get feedback from and stuff. Plus, to get a laser that powerful, it's the battery, it's the power requirement.
Yeah, but
the problem
this
there,
is you know? This. I mean, that,
you're talking
I mean,
about future batteries, yeah.
Future batteries, right?
No, like, but yeah. I think people got over lasers being a thing. They didn't in Star Trek because it was established, but Battlestar Galactica, the remake, doesn't have laser guns. The original
pew laser guns, but like a beam that like a laser pointer.
Yeah, well, if you play, I mean, that's
early TNG does that, or TNG all the way through, I think, does that. It's like, and it's quite awkward at times because there's places where somebody gets shot with a laser in a fairly short corridor and they dodge it like this, which is silly. Mm-hmm.
But you couldn't dodge a laser. You'd be just,
but it's also imagine it like. It's very awkward, like it's going to be like destroying the walls and cutting through doors, and you know.
But that's part of the that would be part of.
Yeah, you're not going to fire one on a space station or on a spaceship where you've got an enclosed atmosphere, are you?
Probably not. But then, would you not do that with not guns anyway? Sorry, I really
depends on your guns.
That, didn't I?
Depends on the kind of guns.
You couldn't fire a revolver or something on a space station, right?
Okay,
well,
depends on the space station
and what kind of how powerful the gun is, you know.
Going back to Bulletgate, I've analysed the scene, and you're right, but he does only manage to get four bullets off.
So that's basically a burst fire.
The little like bop 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 bop. So you know, they just happen to go in between.
Happens to go in between, right? Okay. No, I wasn't feeling that big as deeply about it as I did about some other things we've had, like spikes and knives and stuff. But I just wondered if that was going to be something that anybody noticed. So. But no, Chris brings up something even worse, which you know, Chris, that's, I don't know what's wrong with you, man.
What, the Bobby thing?
Yeah, I mean, what possesses you?
I mean, I'm not gonna give man. I'm not going to give any thumbnail spoilers until I finish the okay. thumbnail, because I'm quite enjoying doing the thumbnails.
I fucking love the
We're
thumbnails.
We're loving the thumbnails too, sir.
And that one that you censored. I genuinely burst out laughing at that. It was funny as fuck.
Oh, actually, I should probably put it on in the background because that was for the clip rather than the full video.
So
I'll show the.
You want the people at home to see it who aren't in your Discord channel or whatever.
Pretty much, yeah. I got to find.
On YouTube? Are you going to replace it with the censored version? Because I do think that censored version is
actually
hilarious.
I funnily enough, so this is the censored version. I did an A/B testing, right? So, you can't see it. Like, so that's, yeah, that's the censored version. Yeah. Shameless snow hunk. Oh, if you click on me, Hamish, you can see.
Of course, I can. Yeah.
You can see the whole thing then.
Right, if you duck your head out of the way. There you go. Stay there for a second, just so everybody can take, because it's, you've gone away from the picture now. Yeah. That's it. Okay, you can come back.
There you go.
Because it takes a few seconds for everything to sort of settle down when you've gone through the frame, if you get me.
Shameless snow hunk, or whatever I said.
Indeed.
Solid film, to be fair. Like, I mean, don't get me wrong, not complicated, but you know.
But you were A/B testing.
I was A/B testing the sensor.
Okay.
So they got a little thing on YouTube for the thing. So I'm going to see which one wins, censored or non-censored. I thought that might be. I made myself laugh with that one. French Ghosty was like, you'd have to censor that for YouTube.
Yeah. I think we've covered the episode, really. We did.
Yeah.
We actually kept on track for quite a chunk of that today before we went on our little tangent. So
I'm going to paste one of my notes to you because I find it funny. That was one of my notes.
Well, where do you paste it? Or should I not know that note?
In the Discord.
Oh right, yeah.
What killed my team?
that is the moment where the next scene is my favorite scene in the whole thing when she defects. I love that. I love her acting. I love when she falls to her knees and she's like, "I'm Gunnery Sergeant Roberta Drake." Like, love that scene. But the bit before is where that's the point where I fell in love with her, where she's just punching this fucking dude.
Well, it takes all sorts to make a world.
So Drew likes his women Amazonian and violent.
I do.
Yeah.
I like angry women.
There's a scene with Dr. Strickland where he looks almost as evil as the guy from the Martin's. Is it Martin?
Very similar, similar kind of.
I think I know the one you're talking about. Actually, there is a bit where he's in slightly on side profile.
Slightly side profile, looking down.
I know the bit you mean, because I remember thinking something similar, thinking, oh, that's the kind of thing Chris will pick up on. This is the thing that when I'm watching them, I'm thinking about what you two might say as well.
I don't know.
Oh, sometimes I want to do like
ten different thumbnails.
I'll do a couple and I'll show you them all. I'll show you everyone.
Oh, don't make me choose, though. Just give me the one that I have to do.
I'll give you the one. Or Drew can be the deciding vote or something. I don't know.
Happy to bring my almost art education into play again. Dropped out of two art degrees, so we've got to put that to use.
And now I'm the one doing the thumbnails, but I got to be honest. I mean, don't get me wrong. It's hardly art, right?
It is art.
It's a kind of collage, really, isn't it?
Yeah, sort of scrapbooking kind of thing. Yeah.
There's a commentary on current media trends and stuff. It's a little bit Dada, which was the last actually good art movement. So, Dada. Yeah.
I don't know Dada.
Dada is what people think surrealism is.
Yeah.
Oh right. Is it Dada like a baby speak, or is it?
Yeah, it's literally that. Yeah. And it's anti-consumerist, anti-capitalistic nonsense. It's a parody of consumer culture and like the actual drivel that And I think it's very pertinent, and it's a good art movement.
Okay, so you would classify my art as da-da.
It's not fully da-da, but that's in there.
It's not as surreal as da-da.
It is in its own way. It is a commentary on the way everybody's doing YouTube thumbnails, and it's a parody of that. But it's also it's also doing something in its own right, and it's funny in its own right. And I love it.
Maybe we could do a vote on the favorite thumbnail at the end of the year or something as a Christmas special.
That would be fun. Yeah.
Maybe. We were talking as well, or maybe this is for off air afterwards. Maybe we're just going too far. But we were talking about other shows to do. But I mean, we've got a lot of The Expanse still to go.
Oh yeah,
we are getting through it quite quickly now, though. So I think we're doing well.
Mm. Well, Chris,
as long as Chris doesn't get a life again, we're all right.
Chris wants to chunk it up because he really wants to watch the next episodes. And
I'm definitely trusting your judgment on all of that, because obviously you've got the
teleological.
Teleological. I was going to telepathical. No, teleological. You've got the teleological insight on that side of things, but when we did season one, the last two episodes you sort of thought were joined together. So I didn't know if it was the same with this one, because we're
not for this one. It's 12 and 13 left for me. Same for you?
I think so.
I don't remember what happens in which of those, but they're both good, and one of them is it's what you'd expect for me. It's one of my favorite episodes. I fucking love it.
Awesome. Cool. All right.
We got good stuff coming up. And we've had a lot of like build. We've had since the midpoint where Eros happened.
Yeah, where
we've
the last story finished, as it were.
Yeah.
The first book finishes in the middle of this series. Yeah,
it's been a lot more build up and putting the pieces in place. And now it's back to let's see what happens. Which cool. Right, well, I like both.
So I need something. I need one of you to say something silly so I can finish the recording. Really.
Oh, Plum Duff.